more better out of the bullpen. One hiccup, but besides that, he's been dominant out of the pen. You're seeing a lot of two-inning bursts from him. Still probably going to be a starter long-term, but at least to end innings out of the bullpen, and he's been, for the most part, pretty solid.
And Brandon Crawford, a 7.43 ERA on the season through his nine appearances. This is his 10th of the year, and the pitch he did go around on, it's now an 0-2 count to Kareem Arusevic, and trying to calm things down. He's been throwing strikes here, three pitches, three strikes, although one of them was hit for a single to Kobayashi. 0-2 the count, and Kobayashi leaning. Go, it's fouled back by Arusevic to stay alive.
And if I had to give one Chinook pitcher that probably has the nastiest stuff on the team, it'd be Crawford. He has probably the best slider. I've seen some very ugly swings that he's gotten on the slider. It's just, can he throw it for a strike? That is the key for Crawford.
0-2 the count still, and Arusevic looking to be the second rafter on base of the inning as that one is fouled away, and it remains an 0-2 count. The rafters have seen just one over the minimum batters up over the last four innings. It's been 13 up, 12 down since the fourth. 0-2 the count coming home. It's hit high in the air out towards straightaway center field, locating the ball. Now Sears finds it. He's underneath and makes the catch for out number two. Brings up Jake Beauchesne with a man on first and one away in the top of the eighth. Still 12-3 Chinooks. And well, this is feeling very similar to the end of the game yesterday. The Chinooks were able to get some runs right at the end of the game, but it wasn't nearly enough, even though they had a grand slam. Still a 7-run Rafters victory as a breaking ball here to Beauchesne hits the outside edge for strike number one. And not that the Rafters have been seeing tons of success against Brandon Crawford, but they did have the leadoff single from Kobayashi, and now a breaking ball misses low for ball number one and a 1-1 count. You can kind of see it slip out of the hand there.
Now, this one of the great things about the Northwoods League, just summer baseball in general, is the lead is safe. This is a Chinooks team that's overcome a 10-run deficit past the seventh inning. You never know what's going to happen each day.
Rafters still looking for that big comeback. 1-1 count. It's popped up to the right side of the infield in foul territory, giving it chase to Chazo, and it will bounce off of the top of the dugout and into the stands. A 1-2 count now to Jake Beauchesne. And, well, you talk about coming back from down big. The Rafters' biggest comeback of the year, a 4-run deficit earlier in the season. And when trailing at the end of the seventh inning, they are 0-33. So still looking for that comeback. And you mentioned it, the Rafters have been close so many times, and that includes the game earlier at Witter Field, as this one is hit out towards center field. Kobayashi was on the run. It's kind of in no man's land. Kobayashi's safe at second, thought about heading for third, but he will stay put at the bag, as that's the second single of the inning, kind of blooped in there for Jake Beauchesne. His now second hit of the game, and he remains red hot for the Rafters. He's 2-for-4 on the afternoon, and it brings up Mananaco with runners on first and second. The top of the eighth. Just 2 days ago, the Rafters hosting the Chinooks. It was 5-0 in the middle of the second. The Rafters had a lot of time to work with, but they were able to eventually tie it up 6-6 as this one is fouled away by Mananaco.
Now, I do have an update about Chinooks catcher Noah Goddard, who was playing in that game. Obviously, left. He was hit in the ear during warm-ups with the ball and had to come out of the game. Mentioned Dylan Sales, who has the big hit in this game, had to come in and catch in that game. Last time he caught, back in high school.
It was a real odd play for him as the 0-1 count is fouled away. Now 0-2 to Mananaco. And yeah, it was an odd game defensively. There were a couple of changes there that you just weren't expecting to see, and kind of made things difficult on us trying to figure out where everyone was going in the press box. Eventually, though, able to figure it out. 0-2 the count, and Brandon Crawford looking to finish off Akko, but he sends one out towards straightaway center field. Underneath it is Sears, and he'll make the catch. Kobayashi trying to tag up for third. The throw is strong enough, but a little too strong as it bounces and is picked up by the third baseman, Gray, but behind the bag. And so a fly ball that ends up being productive as both runners will advance 90 feet. So Mananaco, a fly out, and Jake Beauchesne over to second. Hiroto Kobayashi to third. There's now runners on second and third with two away in the top of the eighth inning. And for the Rafters, they'd love to get some final runs across here. Landon Gaz up at the plate. First pitch fouled back. 0-1 the count. Gaz, the right-handed hitting first baseman. It's a righty-righty matchup between him and Crawford. And, you know, going back to that game 2 days ago, when you've got guys playing out of position the way that the Chinooks had, so that they were able to still maintain the lead and have some clutch plays as well, able to win it in the 12th inning, although the Rafters have really struggled at that point in time. They're 0-5 in extra inning games this year as the breaking ball misses high, now a 1-1 count. And they were so close to winning it a couple of times. They had the bases loaded with nobody out in the bottom of the 10th inning, but wasn't enough to bring home the run as that one misses in the turf and almost got away from Brock Parmer, but able to race over to it. It's now a 2-1 count. But this game has really been all Chinooks since the third inning. Able to reclaim the lead in that inning with a 3-run bottom of the frame, led it 6-3, and from that point on, just continued going in their direction as the pitch to Gaz misses outside, now a 3-1 count. And Landon Gaz trying to get back on track here. Gaz last game 0-5, and he's been on a bit of a rough stretch couple of games after he was red hot just a little while ago as the 3-1 count is fouled away. Now 3-2. This game, he is 0-3, but all of them have been put in play. Last time up, a 5-3 ground out. It was a 4-3 ground out before that, and a fly out to right field. 3-2 the count with runners on second and third, and the pitch taken low for ball number four. The Rafters now have the bases loaded in the top of the eighth inning.
A couple of close misses by Crawford. Usually when he's off, you're going to see a lot of wild misses with that breaking ball, but there, a fastball just a bit outside. Still quite encouraged with what I'm seeing from Crawford. He's been throwing strikes for the most part. Misses have been close and really just one pitch away from getting out of this semi-jam.
That the first walk issued by Crawford. Bases loaded and two away, and at the plate, the left-handed hitting Luke Skinner takes the first pitch for a strike, 0-1 the count. Skinner, left-handed hitting shortstop. It's a lefty-righty matchup between him and Crawford. And Skinner, 0-3 in this game. And still trying to get the hit today as the second pitch misses low and inside. Now a 1-1 count. And Skinner, his last time up, flew out to left field on a pretty well-hit ball that went back to the warning track. Quickly, time taken here is all of a sudden, Crawford steps off the mound and getting a visit from the coaching staff and talking about something here. And
perhaps an injury?
Perhaps, and you hope not. And the way that Crawford took off his hat, he has no glove on his hand, and he is now bent over. And this certainly seems like a potential injury situation. And with that, the trainers will come out to have a look at Brandon Crawford. And this, not what you wanted to see if you're a Lakeshore fan. Well, really, you never want to see this. You never want to see, especially in a game like this where it's such a big lead for one team, an injury at any point in time.
And the big thing, too, Crawford being a young guy, you would hate if this ended up being an arm injury. He still did not get many innings his freshman year, his redshirt freshman year at Louisville. Just feel for the kid. End of the summer. Pitched a lot of innings, probably the most innings he's pitched since his late high school days. And you just feel for him, and they are touching that arm out there. That
yeah.
That's not a good sign.
And you can see he's upset visually just looking at him, disappointed that he's not able to get through this inning. And where we left off, it's a 1-1 count with two outs and the bases loaded. Luke Skinner at the plate, but I'm going to have to assume that he comes out of the game and a new pitcher is going to come in as Lakeshore have to get somebody up and warm. So it's going to be a while until we get back to action here, unless somehow Crawford is able to come back into the game and keep pitching. But assuming not there, and you talk about injuries, and it's been a rough season for the Rafters in terms of injuries as well. But, I mean, you really never want to see it. The Rafters had Jason Barajas go down with an injury. Not a good one, and doesn't appear like he will be back for the rest of the season. Along with that, you saw a couple of hit-by-pitches of these Rafters batters that Christian Bermudez got nailed in the face with hit-by-pitch earlier, and after that, Harrison Garrett got hit in the wrist with a pitch as well. Both of them have been out for the past couple of games as Harrison Garrett had to stay behind, and of course, Brandon Crawford will come out of the game here, and hopefully it's just precautionary, but kind of holding that right elbow there, and hopefully he's all right, but it's never a good sign whenever you see injuries like that. But with a new pitcher coming in, we will give you a breakdown, but before then, we are going to head to a break, and when we come back, it'll be a new pitcher into the game for Lakeshore, an injury timeout. This is Rafters Baseball on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Hi everyone, Seth here from Seth Faces the Music. You know, being the host of the award-winning second greatest radio show in the state of Wisconsin can be a lot of work. I have to come up with new themes all the time. So in the interest of clarity, here are some topics I will not be using in upcoming episodes.
Mittens, tinfoil, gastric bypass surgery, window treatments, 17th century Japanese art, outhouses, bowler hats, spam, clog dancing.
Seth Faces the Music, every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. only on WFHR.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Now, back to more Wisconsin Rapids Rafters baseball on WFHR.
Noah Kimura is back into the game for the Chinooks as he inherits the bases loaded, taking over for Brandon Crawford, and Crawford not having his game end the way that he was hoping for, an arm injury, apparent arm injury, and with that, he comes in for Brandon Crawford. So Noah Kimura, we do have some experience with him. He, of course, got the save in the game just 2 days ago back at Witter Field in the final inning of the game, and that was his first save of the season, and trying to show off the stuff out of the bullpen here, he comes into a real tough situation, and could allow those inherited runners to score, but realistically, it doesn't matter all too much what happens here for the Chinooks. You just got to finish off the game. It's a 9-run lead, and obviously you hate to see an injury like we just saw, and it makes it even harder for a team who's trying to kind of keep off throwing their pitchers. Yesterday, we saw Diego Garcia go those 5 innings despite having pitched just 3 days prior. And in those 5 innings, he threw 85 pitches. So he was getting up there in the pitch count, but pitched well enough to stay out there despite all of the hits that were allowed. And it felt like in that last inning, it was kind of pushing the limit on that one. And you get to see that a few times late in the season when teams get to lose.
Well, with 6 games left in the season and as many days, you know, having to throw an extra arm in the home stretch is just throws off the whole system of a bullpen. You know, I'm sure Wojciechowski had no intention of using another reliever in a 9-run game, and it just moves the line, and when you've used a lot of relievers the last week, only having one off day in the second half, you know, it really hurts the bullpen. It's a trickle-down effect when you have an injury like that.
Yes, it is, and we'll see what happens here. Noah Kimura now hopefully going to finish the game for the Chinooks, the right-handed pitcher who comes into this game, like I mentioned, after having a save his last time out against the Rafters just 2 days ago. Inherits the bases loaded and a 1-1 count to Luke Skinner. The first pitch thrown misses high for ball number two. 2-1 the count. And so Brandon Crawford, his night is over. However, his pitching line is not necessarily complete yet as the 2-1 count misses inside. Now a 3-1 count to Luke Skinner. Left-handed hitting shortstop. It's a lefty-righty matchup between him and Kimura. And that follows off the heels of a phenomenal seven-inning performance from Nate Ciemne, a quality start and one of the best the Rafters have seen this season as the 3-1 count misses outside, three straight balls to start off the game, and that's going to walk home a run. And Luke Skinner with the bases loaded, he's just a walk machine. I don't know why, but he just continues to draw walks with the bases loaded. I feel like that's three of the last four games that he's gotten a bases loaded walk in. Well, hey, it does the trick as he sends each runner 90 feet forward. So Skinner on to first. Gaz is now on second. Beauchesne is on third. And Hiroto Kobayashi came home to score. That's the Rafters' fourth run of the game. 12-4 now in the top of the eighth inning. First pitch called for a strike to Lachlan Maude. 0-1 the count. And Maude up for the fourth time this game. 0-3 so far. And really trying to right the ship. 0-1 the count on the way home. Misses inside for ball number one. A 1-1 count. 12-4 the Chinooks lead. And even a grand slam here would still keep it a four-run game. The Rafters had their first grand slam of the season last night with Jake Beauchesne's home run. Breaking ball here hit foul down the third base line. And a little early on that swing, Maude had it barreled up, but just not timed well. And now a 1-2 count. And Noah Kimura just trying to finish out this game for the Chinooks. 1-2 coming home with two outs, and that one misses outside for ball number two. So the Rafters trying to get a two-out rally here, and they had a two-out rally in that third inning, scoring all three runs with two away. They already scored one run with two outs in this inning. 2-2 count coming home. Grounder over towards third. Nice pickup. Throw on to first. It's a long play, but they're going to get him. 5-3 on the putout, and that takes care of the eighth inning. So not too bad from Noah Kimura as he does walk home one, but then gets the ground out to get out of the inning. The Rafters score one run on their two hits. There were no errors, and the Rafters left three on base. We go to the bottom of the eighth. It is a 12-4 Chinooks lead here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Better begins with the way we treat each other, the way we listen to one another, and the way we serve and support each other. At Aspirus Health, better begins with a commitment to help build healthy families, healthy relationships, and healthy communities throughout a lifetime, from generation to generation. For whatever needs to be better in your life, better begins at Aspirus Health. Passion for excellence, compassion for people.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Rafters Baseball here on WFHR, brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric Inc., Party Envy, Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Comfort Air Heating, Cooling, Fireplaces, McCain, Stevens Point Brewery, Delta Dental, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Gamber Johnson, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Solaris, Aspirus Health, and the Food and Farm Exploration Center. Listen to Rafters Baseball here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Let's get back to the Rafters here on WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
Now into the bottom of the eighth inning, and the Rafters trailing the Lakeshore Chinooks 12-4, and they will turn to a new pitcher after A.J. Buonasetta comes out of the game. Buonasetta in the seventh inning, he relieved Kenny Schultz after Buonasetta threw 24 pitches. He faced five batters. No wild pitches from him, no balks, and no hit by pitches, but he did in one inning pitched, did not allow a run, and allowed just one hit and one walk, had one strikeout as well on five batters faced. 1-0 count, hit out towards left field, and not able to get there. To the wall, now over to Cease Brock Palmer, a leadoff double on the second pitch of the plate appearance. That's his now third time on base, his second hit of the game. He's 2-for-4 and puts a runner in scoring position with nobody out in the bottom of the eighth. Still 12-4, the Lakeshore lead.
Credit to Palmer for putting the ball in play, but that was not a great route in left field on that ball. It looked like there was an attack made at that ball, but just kind of gave up on it last minute, just not take a good route.
Well, Peyton Bryant playing in left field for the first time this season, and a catcher naturally. So an odd movement there, but playing out of position, still got to learn that new spot. And it brings up Cesar Gonzalez to the plate with a man on second and nobody out. Ashton Poole on the mound, breaking ball, misses high for ball number one, a 1-0 count. And Ashton Poole pitched in the game just last night. And he went 1 2/3 innings and looked pretty solid on the mound. Poole, an inning and 2/3, did not allow a run. 1-0 the count now to Gonzalez, and that one misses way outside and bounces high off the wall, and now getting over to it, Lachlan Maud makes sure to grab the ball and throw it back, but a 2-0 count, and on the wild pitch, Farmer is able to advance over to third base, and Gonzalez, 2-for-3 with a hit-by-pitch today. He's continued to look really good for the Chinooks. Righty-righty matchup here, and Armour on third, 2-0 the count. And the most impressive thing about Ashton Poole yesterday was that he didn't walk a batter, as the 2-0 count is in there for a strike. He's really struggled with walks this season. But last night, an inning and 2/3, no runs allowed, no walks issued, and he had a strikeout as well. 2-1 the count to Gonzalez, and the pitch on the way home, it's was going to get a swing, but had to be held back on as it misses high and tight. Now a 3-1 count. And Gonzalez, the right-handed hitting DH, righty-righty matchup. The pitch from Poole misses outside, and there's that walk that I was talking about. And that's the fourth time on base today for Cesar Gonzalez, and he just raises that on-base percentage through the roof. Man, oh man, he has continued to look good for the Chinooks, and on base 4 out of 5 plate appearances today after Gonzalez has reached 2 out of 5 yesterday, so the OBP now up over 50%.
That's 4 hits in 2 games now.
Yes, it is. I mean, he has just continued to really see the ball well, and now a pitch hit out towards right field on the run, Kobayashi, and he will leap and make the grab. A nice play by Hiroto Kobayashi, but it still is deep enough to bring home the run from third base, a sacrifice fly, and that is the 5th RBI of the game for Dylan Sales as he sends home Brock Palmer from third base. Cesar Gonzalez remains on first, and there's now one out in the bottom of the eighth. 13-4, the lead for the Chinooks. And Dylan Sales, a perfect 3-for-3 on the game. The sack fly and a walk. Now Owen DeShazo up at the plate. A swing and a miss for strike number one. Owen won the count, and DeShazo 2-for-4 on the afternoon. Last time up, he struck out swinging in the seventh, and before that, it was 2 singles in a row. On first base is Gonzalez, and the pitch on the way home from Poole in there for strike number 2. 0-2 the count. DeShazo had an RBI single back in that third inning. Did so on the 6th pitch of the plate appearance as well, but now down in the count 0-2, he's going to have to fight here. Poole trying to take care of the right-handed hitter, and the pitch on the way home can't find the outside edge. It's called for a ball, now a 1-2 count. Inning-ending double play is in order, but You have to get that ground ball. The Rafters have not had a double play today. Trying to show off the defense still. A 1-2 count coming home. And that one in there called for strike number three. And that takes care of Owen DeShazo for the second out of the eighth inning. Back-to-back batters retired. And it brings up Cade Sears with two away and a runner on first in the bottom of the eighth. Still 13-4. Chinooks taking a look back at how it all happened. It was the bottom of the first inning when the Chinooks initially took the lead 3-0. The Rafters tied it up 3-3 in the third inning, though. But then another three runs for the Chinooks came in the bottom of the third, took the lead 6-3. That lead became 12-3 with a six-run sixth inning. Each team has scored one run in the inning so far, which makes it 13-4, but runner on first and two away, 1-0 count, called for strike number one. 1-1 the count now to Sears, the left-handed hitting center fielder. It's a lefty-righty matchup between him and Poole. And Sears, 1-4 on the game. He had an RBI double back in sixth inning. And the pitch here hit high in the air out towards shallow right center field. The second baseman, Akko, trailing back and makes the play for out number three. And that takes us to the ninth inning where the Rafters trail by 9. We'll see what they can do when we return. This is Rafters Baseball on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Americans really like voting by mail and in-person early voting. That, according to 2024 statistics from the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. According to EAC, 158,211,780 citizens voted out of 211,144,275 active registered voters, a 74.8% turnout, 3 points lower than 2020. Among the 158 million voters, 52.8 million voted in person on Election Day. But far more Americans voted early, with 46.8 million voting early by mail and almost 48.9 million voting early in person. Mail-in voting accounted for 30.3% of votes cast, with some states offering universal mail balloting or permanent mail or absentee lists. Over 15 million ballots were returned via drop boxes in 36 states, up 10% since 2022. The percentage of in-person Election Day voters dropped in 2024 to only 37.4%, while in-person early voting jumped to 35.2%. The combination of mail and early in-person totaled 65.5%. It's clear that early voting is here to stay. We've linked to the report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Let's get back to Rafters Baseball here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
The Rafters have just three outs to work with, but find themselves down 9 runs in the top of the ninth inning. It's 13-4 Lakeshore, and getting back to work, the Rafters going to be sending up Peyton Bryant to lead things off. It'll be Bryant, Mike Monahan, and Hiroto Kobayashi due up against Noah Kimura, who tries to finish off game after coming in the eighth inning as an injury replacement for Brandon Crawford. Crawford, his line is finished. As he came out of the inning, mid-game, mid-at-bat, it's a fly ball is fouled away down the left field line. 0-1 the count, and tough turn for the Chinooks, having to take out Brandon Crawford due to the injury. He went two-thirds of an inning, allowed one run. It was earned on two hits and one walk, no strikeouts. Faced five batters and threw 21 pitches. Breaking ball now to Bryant, misses below the zone, 1-1 the count. Peyton Bryant, right-handed hitting left fielder, back on the board with a single today, even though he did not manage to get a hit yesterday. He did reach twice on a walk and a hit by pitch. One on the way home here, misses for ball number two, a 2-1 count. And he's reached multiple times in his last three games, trying to make it four in a row if he can reach base here. 2-1 count coming home. It's a grounder to the right side of the infield, sneaks on by into right field. First multi-hit game of Peyton Bryant's Rafters career, and Don with his second single of the afternoon. Brings up Mike Monahan to the plate with a man on first and nobody out in the top of the ninth. And Noah Kimura, that's the first hit that he has allowed. And Kimura, why, you talked about it earlier in the game when he came in. And this season for him, Kimura has had some up and downs. And, of course, the ups was the save that he had just 2 days ago and came into the game, locked it down in the 12th inning. But it was really that game at Wausau that he really struggled in back on July 22nd.
The thing is, not many pitchers can say good things about pitching in Wausau. That is a very hitter-friendly park.
Yes, that is true, as this one is popped up by Mike Monahan to the first base side and caught by DeShazo for out number one. And Peyton Bryant will remain on first base. So the first out of the inning, there's now a runner on first and one away in the top of the ninth. 13-4, the lead for the Chinooks, and it brings up Hiroto Kobayashi.
And if you look at Kimura, it's a very similar tale with all of these pitchers. ERA does not tell the whole story. Limited innings for all these pitchers.
Fly ball out towards left field on the first pitch to Kobayashi, and jogging over to first, it's caught in left field by the left fielder David Miza for out number two.
All it takes is one bad outing, one blow-up outing to wreck your ERA for the entire summer, which is why we're only playing in 72-game season, and most pitchers not even pitching in half those games. You cannot look at ERA. You have to look at the individual appearances.
And it's the same thing when you look at a guy like Jace Barajas for the Rafters. It had always been the very end of the inning, and a lot of those runs that came across were inherited runners, even though his ERA got kind of tanked by it. So you got to take into account that as well, as the first pitch to Kareem Arusovic misses outside, 1-0 the count. Runner on first base is still Peyton Bryant. And the 1-0 count, fouled back by Arusovic, evens it up 1-1. The Rafters down 13-4 in the top of the ninth. Runner on first and down to their last out. Kimura trying to finish it off. 1-1 count, and he fires. It's a slow roller to the right side of the infield. Picked up by Kimura, flips it to first, and that is game over. Well, big thank you to Olmeyer for joining us today as the color commentator of the night, but that is going to do it as he exits the broadcast booth. He's got a post-game interview to go do, so shout out to him for joining us, and good luck on that interview. And well, the Rafters post-game show comes up next. The Rafters can't get the win here in Lakeshore as they ended with a loss. The final score 13-4. As in that ninth inning, the Rafters scored no runs on the one hit. There were no errors and one left on base. So, post-game show comes up next. It is not a good news Sunday, as we'll talk about how it all happened and take a look at the numbers when we return. This is Rafters Baseball on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies. And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Let's get back to Rafters Baseball here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Rafters postgame show here on WFHR. An unfortunate game for Wisconsin Rapids as they ended up falling. The final score was 13-4. The Rafters could not take down the Lakeshore Chinooks. And taking a look back at how it all happened now, let's take a look inning by inning. Back in the first inning, bottom of the first, the Chinooks took the early lead 3-0 on a base-clearing 3-RBI double from Dylan Sales off of Trevor Moik. Not the start that he was hoping for. And then in the third inning, the Rafters, though, would tie it up 3-3. So top of the third, the Rafters were able to add 3 runs. It was an RBI single from Kareem Arusovic, an RBI single from Jake Beauchesne, and then an error allowed Kareem Arusovic to come home and score. Tied it up 3-3, and then in the bottom of the third, the Chinooks were able to respond right back with 3 more runs of their own. They scored those 3 runs on an RBI from Jack Council, an RBI from Owen DeShazo, and then an error that allowed Dylan Sales to come home and score on a throw from Landon Gaz that was way offline, or sorry, from Peyton Bryant that was offline and allowed the runner to come home and score. That made it 6-3 Chinooks, and it would stay 6-3 for a while, but that changed in the bottom of the sixth when the Chinooks put up 6 runs against Rafters reliever Kenny Schultz. Schultz had gone back-to-back perfect innings entering that frame, but sixth inning did not go his way as the Chinooks had 8 hits off of Schultz. And those 8 hits resulted in 6 runs, an RBI double from Cade Sears, a 2-RBI triple from David Miza, RBI single from Jack Council, and an RBI single from Cesar Gonzalez that scored those runs and made it a 12-3 lead for the Chinooks. Then the Rafters would be the next to score. It was in the eighth inning when they added 1 more run on a bases-loaded walk from Luke Skinner, but that was all that they would get in the eighth inning. So 12-4 the score, and then 1 more run would come across for the Chinooks in the bottom of the eighth. A sacrifice fly from Dylan Sales after the leadoff double Brock Palmer, and a wild pitch sent him to third. And that made it 13-4, and that was the final score of the game as Noah Kimura finished it off for Lakeshore on the mound. Taking a look back at the stats of the game, let's look on the offensive side of the ball. Peyton Bryant, multi-hit game as a Rafter. 2-for-4 from the plate for him. 2-for-4 from Jake Beauchesne as well as he picked up an RBI. Along with that, Hiroto Kobayashi reached twice. He drew a walk and was 1-for-4 from the plate. And outside of that, real rough game for the Rafters offense. On the pitching side, Trevor Moik struggled in his 3 innings. He allowed 5 earned runs, 6 runs in total on 5 hits and 3 walks, had just 3 strikeouts. Kenny Schultz had a strong start to the game. Well, and he totaled 3 innings pitched, allowed 6 hits. All 6 were earned on 8 hits, although he didn't walk a batter, no hit by pitch either. Turned over to A.J. Buonasetta, and Buonasetta did not allow a run in his 1 inning pitched. Ashton Poole allowed just 1 run in his 1 inning, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 1 strikeout for him as well. And that's about all for the look of the Rafters numbers. Taking a look up next, the Rafters are going to be heading to Green Bay, that game tomorrow at 6:35 p.m. Looking forward to it as they will head to the frozen tundra for a game against the Rockers. Tyler Pichetti, the righty on the mound for the Rafters, making another start this year after most of his appearances have come out of the bullpen. He takes on the red-hot Steve Marhefke, who has been one of the best pitchers in the Northwoods League this second half, probably the best in my opinion, a 1.00 ERA over a sizable number of innings. He's got a 2-0 record and trying for another win against the Rafters tomorrow at 6:35. The pregame will come your way at 6:20 p.m., so looking forward to that. But that's just it for our broadcast and our post show tonight. So big thank you to all of you for tuning in. Always great to have the support of the fans of the Rafters, and look forward to having you join us yet again for the next couple of games on the road. The Rafters, just one more home game this season. You can check them out on August 6th, that is this Wednesday, final home game of the year against the Fond du Lac Dock Spiders. Hoping for a little bit of momentum heading into that game, but looking forward to that. And of course, they've got 2 on the road before then, both at Green Bay. So first pitch tomorrow, 6:35. Pre-game show, 6:20. Thank you as well to WFHR for hosting us as always, to the coaches of the Rafters for being open to talk, to the Lakeshore members and staff and employees for always being great and hospitable, and along with that, of course, Wyatt Bohmeyer for joining us as my color commentator throughout the game today. Great to have him on the air, and always enjoy his presence here, and glad that he finally was able to join the broadcast today and add some insight into the Chinooks batting lineup and to their pitching staff and their team in total. One final shout out has to go to Jake Beauchesne, who joined us on the pregame show today. Glad to have him joining and get to hear his side of things as a player and after his red hot streak. And also thanks to him for getting two hits this game. Big for the Rafters, although they ended up falling. So one final time from Mequon, Wisconsin, the Rafters could not get the win. The final score, Rafters 4, the Chinooks 15. From myself, Austin Thomas, and from the rest of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, thank you, and have a great rest of your night.
That's Chief Judge David Barron. He's referring to that 1898 Supreme Court case. It is United States versus Wong Kim Ark. In that particular case, coming out of California, you have parents who are of Chinese ancestry and citizenship. They are here in California, in the United States. There is the birth of their son. The question is that son a citizen of the United States of America? And the Supreme Court uniformly, unequivocally says 1898 that their son is a citizen of the United States of America. Why? Because he was born on American soil. Other members of the panel just this past week said they required to stick with the holding in that case. Judge Julie Rickleman, R-A-K-E-L-M-A-N, said that the Trump interpretation is wrong, and the ask that the court adopt the dissenting opinion in that 19th century case simply is not what she is going to do in the First Circuit. She tells the DOJ attorney who's arguing again on behalf of the executive order, she says we have to apply the majority decision, not the dissenting opinion, almost mocking, if you will, the position of the government attorney. A ruling against the administration here, likely coming from the First Circuit Court of Appeals, saying that the executive order cannot stand, would represent the second time. In addition to all these district courts, you also have appeals courts, the First Circuit, and also even before the First Circuit review of all this, the first time that a Court of Appeals has taken a look at this is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. That's that huge geographic swath of land, again, on the West Coast, also including Hawaii and Alaska, huge geographic area. That's the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. It said last month that, again, the Trump executive order cannot stand. And in a separate case, again, coming out of district courts there in the Ninth Circuit, finding that the president's executive order is unconstitutional, contrary to precedent, contrary to the law, contrary to what has been the understanding in America for well over 100 years, arguably even before the decision of the Supreme Court in that Wong Kim Ark case, saying that cannot stand. So now the likely status is that sometime soon, the First Circuit Court of Appeals is going to join the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in answering the question that the United States Supreme Court did not answer, which is that the executive order cannot stand and that indeed the law is and should remain as it has been for all of recent history. And that is that children born this year in the wake of the executive order, they are babies born even of parents who are illegally here, who are here temporarily. All of that cannot stand. All of that, a part of what the appeals courts are doing, and all of that, a part of what the judges in America are assigned to do as they undertake the work and the initiatives, taking up these challenges to the president's decisions. When we come back in our final segment, some comments from at least one caller about many of the topics we've discussed today, and then also some observations about other things going on in the courts of our land as Amicus Law Review continues.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I push through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
I'm the threat that's already inside the house. In the closet, under the bed, in the car. But I don't want your money or your TV. I can't be scared away or negotiated with. I'm patient and quiet. I don't sleep. You can't call the cops on me. You can't even see me. I'm the threat of family fire. And as long as your guns aren't stored securely, I'll be there. Protect your family. Secure all your guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. That's endfamilyfire.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel. This is the final segment of our two-hour program this weekend. Appreciate your attention, appreciate your engagement on all of these issues. And yes, as I say with increasing frequency, it's a lot. It is a lot to digest. I appreciate that very much. I appreciate your interest in the civics aspect of these issues, in the law school stuff that we do on this radio broadcast as well. It is perhaps the one good thing that comes out of all of these challenges to the president's executive orders and other machinations coming out of this administration, that we also learn more about our judicial system, about how courts work, about the processes, the rules, the procedures, and even the doctrines that they apply on a regular basis. Appreciate your attention, acknowledging that it is a lot. We also appreciate here in our broadcast the comments and the involvement of all of our listeners, and that includes Mark, who calls in and also reports to us on the studio chat line about two of the issues we've discussed this weekend, and those include redistricting and gerrymandering. And about that, Mark notes that race and partisan politics are still entwined intimately, and goes on to note that it is interesting coming out of Louisiana that in the 4th District, Mike Johnson, of course, who is the Speaker of the House of Representatives, it is his district that is somewhat the focus of that Louisiana case that we talked about. The case is still before the Supreme Court when it comes to deciding whether a newly drawn map that includes two majority black districts should stand. Mark notes that it is 4th District. It's Mike Johnson's district. It resembles the very original gerrymander up there in Massachusetts, coming out of Eldridge Gerry's governorship at the time, and the cartoon of great fame that gives life to this notion of gerrymandering. Mark, appreciate very much your comment about not only the history here, but also about the fact that when it comes to Louisiana, comes to Texas, maybe comes to these other states, including California and Illinois and Missouri and Indiana, who knows how far this is going to go as we take up once again the issue of line drawing and gerrymandering in the nation. Some of it may be partisan, some of it may be racial. It's all intertwined, and that is Mark's point, and that certainly is one of the things with which courts need to wrestle. What is the nature of this line redrawing? What are the reasons for our doing it? And it affects dramatically the results. Mark also comments upon tariffs and notes, as we have noted here repeatedly, including in our weekend broadcast here, that the Constitution, he says it's pretty clear. It is indeed pretty clear, Mark, that the Congress has the power to set tariffs. The way that the president is doing it, he says, is essentially taxation without representation. Mark goes on to say the founders were concerned, as discussed in various letters of the Federalist Papers, about a president setting policy for personal gain, and these tariffs fall in that category. Mark, appreciate very much your commentary about the authority of the president to impose these tariffs as we have seen them in recent months and weeks. Appreciate those comments, Mark, and appreciate the comments and the involvement of all of you here on our broadcast. A final note also about the work of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. We talked about them just a few moments ago in connection with their affirmation of the traditional meaning and purpose of the 14th Amendment. Just late Friday, the Trump administration suffered what can only be called another setback. You recall well that there was a judge, we talked about her a lot, named Mame Frimpong, F-R-I-M-P-O-N-G. She is in the Federal District Court in Los Angeles. She had decided that the actions of various federal agents in detaining without suspicion, without an appropriate basis, without finding a basis to detain and even arrest people on the streets of Los Angeles cannot stand. On Friday, a three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals affirms what Judge Frimpong has directed, telling basically the federal agents to stand down, or at least redirecting them to what the law of our nation has always been, that you have to have reasonable suspicion before you detain someone, before you arrest them on the streets of America, including Los Angeles. You can't simply base it upon how they look, upon their employment place, or some other characteristics that are not based upon a reason to believe that they're engaged in some kind of criminal activity. The three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit affirming the lower court ruling that these kinds of actions relying exclusively on a person's race and some other factors, for example, like speaking Spanish, cannot form the basis for arrests and detentions. And of course, we know that the administration's raids there and the arrests, other things, have been a lot of focus of our national attention. All of that back in the news recently. The appellate judges wrote that the plaintiffs in this case are likely to succeed on the merits. Again, all of this in the nature of preliminary injunctions. They're likely to succeed in showing that federal agents made arrests based on how people looked, how they spoke, and where they lived or worked. And for that reason, they said that activity cannot go on. The civil rights groups that brought this case filed these suits on July 2nd, accusing the Trump administration of these unconstitutional sweeps. Since early June, nearly 3,000 people have been arrested. And that happening before and even in the wake of Judge Frimpong's order. The American citizens and immigrants who are illegal in the United States have been caught in this dragnet. Of course, even if you're not a citizen, you are entitled to the protections of due process and what our constitutional dictates provide. 61-page ruling. The appellate judges said it was likely the arrests were made without reasonable suspicion. And they added that because the arrests were part of a pattern of officially sanctioned behavior, they're likely to recur without court intervention. They have said it cannot go on. It's got to stop. And the Court of Appeals now affirming the lower court, saying you can't do this, likely headed to the Supreme Court again. We've got a lot on our docket of America, a lot on the docket of this broadcast. I thank you once again for staying with me on all of this. And I invite you back again next weekend as we take up the events, the circumstances, the times in which we live under the rule of law here in the United States of America. Have a good weekend, everybody.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Matt Piper. Smoke from Canadian wildfires is still hovering over some Midwestern states, bringing warnings of unhealthy air. Air quality alerts have been in effect in 11 states this weekend, and New York City has already issued one for tomorrow. National Weather Service meteorologist Bob Orovec.
Going forward, it looks like that same general pattern of the flow out of the west-northwest across the northern tier of the country, southern portions of Canada is going to continue for the next week or more. So it looks like we're probably going to have more smoke moving from Canada into the northern tier of the United States.
Authorities say a former U.S. soldier suspected of killing four people at a Montana bar is still at large and believed to be armed. The shooting happened Friday morning at the Al Bar in Anaconda, Montana. State Attorney General Austin Knudsen.
We believe this is an armed and extremely dangerous individual. I'm going to ask the public.